Thank you for downloading this podcast from Nestle.com. You can find more podcasts in the media section of our website. Meanwhile, we hope you enjoy the show.
Very good morning to all of you. It's a pleasure again to spend some time with you this morning, as well as, of course, our discussions last night, which are always very stimulating. Usually when I present to our investors and financial analysts, I talk about strategies, I talk about what's happening in terms of growth in my part of the world, Zone AOA, which stands for Asia, Oceania, Africa, and the Middle East. But this time, Roddy has asked me to talk about a bit of a different topic, and that is managing the unexpected. And I'll explain why. Zone AOA is clearly a growth driver for the zone. This is not a surprise. If we look at the population of the world, 76% of the population is in Zone AOA. 83% of all new babies born is in Zone AOA. On average, the GDP in this part of the world is growing three times as fast as the GDP for G7. We are seeing in many countries still a growing population. So overall, it is only to be expected that this part has to be a growth driver for the zone, and this is indeed happening. With only 21% of total Nestle sales coming from this part of the world, the future clearly looks bright. If we look at all the opportunities in terms of demographics and in terms of GDP growth that's happening out there. However, Zone AOA is sometimes also called Zone CNN, because every day something happens in the region, be it a natural disaster, be it a political disaster, an economic disaster, and we need to cope with this if we want to continue to grow. Here are just some examples of what has been happening in the zone. And it's important to realize that my entire team is very well prepared to deal with this. You will see later on that we have a very stringent concept of business continuity planning in order to, whenever an issue hits us in one part of the region, and we are prepared to deal with it. Africa has been in the limelight in the last few months. We are all aware of the Arabic Spring, as it is called, but we also know about the Ivory Coast, and I'll come back to that in a minute. But clearly political and social unrest is a known risk, and it affects us time and again. We also have in Asia some areas where there is tension. We saw all the upheavals in Thailand last year, the issue between the red shirts and the yellow shirts. Pakistan continues to be a hotbed. And these are areas where we do business, where we have factories, where we employ a lot of people. In Africa, these are the countries in yellow and red, those in red where we have had conflicts recently, and this has been spreading in the last few months. The zone also has to deal with a series of countries that are under sanction, either by Washington or by Brussels. But here again, in countries such as Iran, Syria, Zimbabwe, Sudan, we have businesses, we have operations. Clearly, we have to work within the boundary of the sanctions that are imposed on us. But so far, we continue to do business. It's not always easy. In the case of Iran, to get financing, we now need to deal with local Arabic banks or Turkish banks. Same applies to transportation, because none of the foreign well-established transportation companies can service us. But we manage this in a very creative way, but always within the boundaries of the sanctions. We also know that elections are a catalyst for unrest. This year alone, 2011, out of the 54 countries in Africa, 26 countries will be holding elections, presidential or otherwise. And it is interesting to note that if you put the two and you overlay them, it's going to be a hot year in Africa. That is clear. But, as I said, we are prepared. What's important to understand is that we have a very stringent system of crisis procedures and business continuity planning in the group, and particularly in the zone. Whenever a crisis hits a market, immediately the market head takes the lead in putting together a crisis team. He then works with his management committee, and immediately in parallel we are informed here in the center, where I put up a crisis committee with people depending on the nature of the issue. We then work very closely here in the center with all the different function groups, be it technical, human resources, SBUs, whatever is needed. Also, we deal with the globally managed businesses, because they are responsible for their activities, but we apply a Nestle in the market, a Nestle in the zone approach, where zone management takes the lead to ensure that all of this is managed correctly. Also, our liaison with corporate communication is extremely important, so that we can, on a timely manner, continuously inform the outside world of what is happening with a particular crisis, and particularly how is it affecting our people and our business. And let me share with you a few examples of what we experienced in the last few months. First of all, last year, the floods in Pakistan that happened in August, where 4,500 villages were basically washed away. 20 million people were displaced in this country. These floods were extremely critical for us, because we are a big player in the milk industry in Pakistan. Milk is basically our lifeline for our existence there. 300,000 cattle died during the floods, major transportation issues for several weeks. And immediately we saw the weeks thereafter that inflation started to increase in this country. The GDP dropped quite substantially, and this was a very dramatic situation for the country, and also a major risk for us. As usually, immediately we put a crisis committee together. We also put together what we call the vigilance committee. In the milk collection areas. Milk is coming from the northern part, where we have two of our big factories. And due to a lack of action by the Pakistan government at that particular beginning of the crisis, we ourselves took the initiative to, first of all, look after the villages where we collect a lot of the milk. We made food distribution. We used our milk tankers. Since we could not collect milk in many parts, we converted these milk tankers into water tankers and supplied the villages that were in need of drinking water with water supplied from our factory using these tankers. We've done this also in many other parts of the world. Whenever there is a crisis, it's usually the first need is water. And we are fortunate to have these logistical arrangements. We also took the initiative to vaccinate 300,000 cows ourselves due to a lack of any action by the Ministry of Agriculture. And this really helped us to save a lot of the animals, and you will see later on that the impact on our milk collection was minimal. We also do a lot of work on drinking water facilities in the villages, hygienic facilities at schools. A lot of this was damaged with the floods. We had a team of engineers that fixed all of this. We spent about $1 million, some of it together with the Swiss Dairy Corporation, one of the NGOs. At the end of the day, a very little impact for us, something that could have been very serious. We only saw a 7% reduction in milk intake for the first months. And as a matter of fact, on the contrary, Pakistan in 2010 was one of our largest and highest growth contributors. So this is one example where a crisis was extremely well managed by our people who were truly on the ball. Ivory Coast, a very different situation, clearly self-made, man-made. A situation where after elections we had two presidents claiming victory. And fairly soon after that we started to face sanctions by the EU. We then had a situation where the central bank was closed, which meant that a few weeks later all the operating banks also could no longer work. We continued our two factories in Ivory Coast. We have an important factory producing Nescafe for the local market, but more importantly for all the export markets in Central West Africa, as well as for some European countries. And we have another factory producing Maggi culinary products, both for local and for exports. We continue to operate these two factories under difficult conditions with a lot of security issues. But it was at the end of March where we had to close down because the security was getting serious. And until that time, we were basically operating on a cash, 100% cash basis because checks didn't work anymore, banks were closed, so we were paying our people in cash. We were buying raw materials and packaging materials with cash. A rather primitive situation, but it enabled us to continue to churn our factory around and get output. It was a humanitarian disaster in this country, over 1 million people displaced. Huge shortages of medicine, food, and water, which obviously was a serious issue. However, again here, crisis committees were put in place, both at the market and in the central level. We already had in place, like we have in many countries, a contingency plan. What if something happens? So we were immediately able to activate the contingency plan to supply the importing markets for these products produced in Ivory Coast coming from other markets. And as a matter of fact, we did not run out of stock at all on Nescafe and Maggi products in all the other Central Western African markets because we had other supply countries lined up. When the Ouattara government started to get closer to victory, by getting into Abidjan. The last 2 weeks we had to close our factories completely because we couldn't anymore ensure safety for our people. We also, as a safety measure, suspended our globe connections. We also evacuated our expatriates from this country because security was clearly no longer guaranteed. We saw a lot of looting taking place. Our Yupagon factory, which is the culinary factory, as well as our R&D center, got severely looted. You see some pictures here of the rampage. But fortunately, the core of our factories, the manufacturing centers, were untouched. And that meant that once President Ouattara was proclaimed officially president, within 2 weeks we started up the Abidjan factory for coffee, and the Yupagon factory started up last week, because the not having run the air conditioning in the factories for several weeks, there was a lot of cleaning up to do and a lot of mold forming. So, obviously, sales were impacted by about 30 million, which is manageable from a zone point of view. But here again, what was important is that all our importing markets who are serviced by these two factories did not lose one case of sales because of alternative supply arrangements. Another situation, Egypt. We are all familiar of the Arabic Spring. What happened with the demonstrations starting in January. Two very intense weeks in this country. Many of the factories of our competitors faced strikes straight after the revolution came to an end. And here again, it's an interesting example of how business continuity planning could really make a difference. Again, crisis committees were set up straight away. We had to close our three factories near Cairo in the last 7 days of the revolution, again because people were not able to come to their offices or to the factories. For us, of particular concern was the protection of physical assets. The security was completely at a standstill. The police was not to be found. And it was amazing to see how many of our own Egyptian colleagues decided to protect the assets of our factories and with groups day and night were there to help out. In Cairo, we also have a satellite of the Nestlé Business Services, which is our shared service center, based the main one being in Manila, Philippines, but in Cairo we have a satellite for Arabic-speaking countries. Obviously, this center also came to a standstill, but within 3 days we transferred the call center partly to Dubai and partly to Manila. And again, this was done flawlessly with minimal interruptions. So, in spite of all of this, Egypt is a market that has shown tremendous growth since the revolution. We are 30% up in rig for the first quarter. So here again, a good example of how the entire team with a strong management leadership in place on the spot can manage a situation which was really, people had no idea where this was going. Finally, the Japan situation, which was a major natural calamity, starting with an earthquake, then a tsunami with waves of up to 38 meters, and then the very unsettling nuclear issue of the Fukushima nuclear plant north of Tokyo. We were affected to some extent. Our Sendai sales office, which is in the center, the epicenter was destroyed, and we had to immediately evacuate there. We sent all our employees to another sales branch in Niigata. Our important Kasumigaura factory, which is north of Tokyo, 160 kilometers from Fukushima, had some damage, fortunately not major structural damage, so within 2.5 weeks we could start up again the plant. We expatriated our families who were residing in Tokyo to Kobe, which is more south, where we have our headquarters. And what we did, because of the uncertainty with the Fukushima nuclear plant, we were measuring radiation in all our workplaces in Tokyo, in Kasumigaura, on an hourly basis, then on a two-hourly basis, measuring the radiation levels, posted that on the intranet so that employees knew at any time whether there was an increasing risk, because this was the main issue, particularly in Tokyo, where what would happen. Nobody really knew the communication on the Fukushima plant by the government was very sketchy. There was clearly a lack of transparency. But this really helped to calm down our people and to let them concentrate on getting back to work. We also, for Tokyo, put in place a major evacuation plan that if a major radiation cloud would hit us in Tokyo, we were ready to evacuate 2,800 people, including their families, to Kobe. Accommodation was all lined up, all arranged, transportation, because if a crisis like that happens and you're not prepared, there's no way you will be able to get out of Tokyo. So, and again, this was appreciated by the staff. They were aware, and so we were extremely transparent in dealing with our people. Fortunately, none of our people or direct families were affected by this, including those employees in Sendai. We have 26 people living very close to the Fukushima plant. The cost impact, amazingly, was minimal for us, only about 10 million Swiss francs. This was basically stock that got damaged, that fell off racks in warehouses, etc. And because our staff was able to really concentrate on getting back our house in order, getting resupplies, we were the first food and beverage company in Japan that got back into normal delivery to the major supermarkets. And this was recognized by President Okada, the president of Aeon supermarket chain, which I must say gave me a lot of satisfaction to hear that this was achieved. Japan is also important for us in terms of exports, partly us exporting products to other countries. And obviously, as soon as this happened, importing countries put a ban on products from Japan because of the uncertainty related to radiation. So we put in a process, a positive release procedure that any raw materials coming into our factories were tested for radiation, and all products that were going out also had to be tested for radiation. Here again, business continuity planning was in place. We are sending sizable quantities of Nescafe produced in Japan to Turkey for our very fast-growing Nescafe 3-in-1. Here we had to change source to another country, and that was affected without a glitch, and Turkey never had any stockouts. The same applied for our boosters, which are for the foaming powder, for the cappuccinos that we sell in China. We are also importing a lot of raw materials from Japan, used in other Nestle factories around the world. And immediately our supply chain people did an amazing job in following 20,000 supply links to make sure that all of these products were properly tested on radiation before they left Japan, making sure that importing countries would allow these products to be imported. And out of the 20,000, only 8 items we had a serious problem with. So overall, this was again handled extremely well. These are just a few examples of what is happening, or has been happening. In spite of all of this, we are continuing to see good growth. As I started my presentation, the Zone AOA is a growth driver and will continue to be a growth driver. And to summarize, we are used to operate in turbulent times. Our team here at the head office, but more importantly, our teams in the markets are ready for this. We have solid business continuity plans in each country. The major SKUs, we have a backup plan that if something happens in a factory, say a major fire or a major natural disaster, or a major labor dispute, we can fairly fast resupply from another source. So we are clearly prepared, and we are also very much inspired by the word weiji in Chinese, in Mandarin, which means crisis. If you look at the two characters separately, wei meaning danger, G meaning opportunity. Where there is a problem, where there is a danger, there is always an opportunity. And this, we are very much guided by this to keep the spirit of Zone AOA moving forward in a fast pace. And that's basically my message of how we run Zone CNN. With pleasure.
Shorter questions on the zone. Sure, Fritz would be very happy to be as broad in his answers as you are in your questions. Who'd like to go first? I know it's early in the morning. Jeremy.
Morning. Can you talk a little bit about sort of economic crises? Obviously, we've not had any for a while, but can you talk about what your approach would be, you know, if there was a major currency devaluation or hyperinflation or something like that? Thanks.
Well, the last major crisis in the zone was the Asian financial crisis, 96, 97. During that time, our business in Asia obviously was affected to some extent, but we continued to see growth. We are more and more we are looking at producing on the spot, and this is a bit of a change from the 90s, where we were looking at concentrating production in big manufacturing centers and then doing a lot of intermarket supplies. However, we have seen that this can be problematic in terms of logistics. In less developed markets, there are a lot of non-tariff trade barriers that you have to deal with. And this is why we are more and more looking at making production closer to where consumption is taking place. This is partly done through a new concept of so-called finishing factories. These are smaller production units where you import the bulk and do the finishing, the filling and packing locally. And then as volume increases, you then ramp up production and then turn these factories into full-fledged production centers. And this obviously helps when you have also major currency issues. At the end of the day, the financial crisis in 96-97 for us as a food company was minimal. I always say that whatever crisis you have, people still have to eat and drink. So I don't see that as a big, big challenge, Jeremy.
Can you talk us through what happened with regards to the Chinese government putting pressure on fast-moving consumer goods companies not to rise prices, and you know what you think about the whole situation there? I know you guys have been rising prices in China, and just as an add-on, can you just give us some thoughts on the Chinese market generally at the moment?
Well, what we have seen in China is not only in China. We have seen this in many countries where governments are either putting in place price controls, wanting to avoid major pressure on purchasing power. In the Middle East, in many countries, it is very difficult to increase prices. In the case of China, we foresaw that we would be having to deal with rising costs for raw materials. We already did the majority of our price increases in the last quarter last year, and that's why the pricing, the positive pricing you see today in China really comes from that period. So we were not affected by the proclamations of the Chinese government. We had already had those price increases several months earlier. Here again, what's important is that you need to be very transparent with the authorities. And our teams in the markets, we have a good understanding what's happening to all these commodity costs. And we sit down with the authorities, explain, show them the charts, and in 9 out of 10 cases, they understand, and ultimately we will be able to raise prices. But it's not only through raising prices that we are going to cover these gaps. It is also with efficiency improvements. Yesterday, I understand José López took you through what NCE is all about. This is a very important part of the equation. But it's also about re-engineering your formulas. We recently had an interesting experience in Vietnam, where we have a good business with Milo, which is one of our chocolate malt beverages in powder form. This contains skim milk powder. Skim milk powder is one of the ingredients that has really been increasing quite dramatically. And they re-engineered it, replacing part of the skim milk powder with soya protein, which is of a lower cost. And they came up with a product that achieved a 60-40, so clearly consumer preference. And by doing that, we were able to keep to our very strategic price point of 1,500 Vietnamese dong. And it's this kind of actions that are needed to be done continuously. Same on packaging materials. Packaging material is important because it gives your product a shelf life. But I challenge the troops, why do we need sometimes shelf lives for a fast-moving item that is 15 months? Why can't it be 12, 9, or even 6? Every 3 months reduction in shelf life gives you a sizable cost saving in packaging materials, because you can use packaging materials with lesser barriers. So there are a lot of opportunities. It's not only pricing that is going to save the world. But coming back to your question, in the case of China, we have not been affected.
Sorry.
I have a question on to someone who has been around for a while and is passing the baton. What would you say has been the main achievement to the zone that you have been bringing over the recent years, and what would be the main challenge you would highlight to the person who takes over the zone? Thank you.
I've been in charge of the zone since 2005, so for the last 6 years. I would say the biggest satisfaction that I've gotten out of these last 6 years of my 41 years is clearly the success we've had with the PPP strategy, the properly positioned products, which has been growing at least twice as fast as the overall organic growth for the group. We've been able to come up through the PPP model with a lot of new interesting product concepts, but not only product concepts, also packaging concepts, distribution concepts, really spreading out our distribution wider and deeper has given us enormous opportunity to reach millions and millions of new customers. And for me, that has been one of the biggest satisfactions. The challenges for the future, if we want to grow in the emerging markets, and as you know, Paul Bulcke has said openly that he wants to get emerging markets contribution to total sales up from 30% to 45% by 2020. I think this is an absolute possibility. But it means that emerging markets will have to grow 8-10% per annum minimally. It will mean that we need to develop people. And I think if there's one big challenge, will be the war on talent. We are actively working on this. It's not just hiring people, but it is developing them. It is coaching them. Giving them the right exposures. The whole issue of succession planning is extremely important in this exercise, which I think the group has done a good job in always having right talent at the right time. But if we want to grow with these large at these large paces, we will need a lot of additional people. We foresee sizable capital investments in the coming years. That means we will need numerous engineers to build these factories. And we will need a lot of new talent in marketing and sales. This, for me, I think would be a big challenge. But the group is well aware of that, and we need to continuously work on that.
It seems that M&A is not that easy in this region.
What is not?
M&A, merchant acquisitions, is not that easy in this region, at least when we compare it with other regions. What are the special challenges in this region for M&A? Or do you think that this can change in the future?
Well, it's clear that in zone AOA, the bulk of our growth is coming through internal growth. Innovation, renovation is key. Because of the high growth expectations in this part of the world, we have been increasing our number of R&D centers in Asia. Traditionally, we only had one R&D center in Singapore. Today, we have got two R&D centers in China. We have announced the opening of an R&D center in India in 2012. And we opened last year an R&D center in Africa. So internal growth is clearly the priority. However, we are always looking at opportunities for external growth. We are making acquisitions here and there. It is not the same pace as we see in the Western world. It is very important that if you make an acquisition or you go into a partnership, that you're absolutely right, ensure that the chemistry between the two companies works. This is why we've looked at a lot of opportunities, but have rejected a lot of them as well, because we felt this is not going to work. And you all know how important it is when you have an acquisition that the integration has to ultimately work, which is not always the case. appoint the acquisition that we have announced recently for China, Yinlu. This is not an acquisition that came overnight. Yinlu has been our co-packer for Nescafé Ready to Drink since 2007, so there is a four-year relationship where we really feel that these people share the same values and culture as we have at Nestlé. We are now waiting for government approval. So when there are opportunities and they really work out, we will go for them. But there are challenges. Let's face it, in Asia particularly, shareholders' value is a very different notion for many companies. The whole model is based more on cash flow than on bottom line margins. You look at the average company returns in Japan, and that makes it very difficult to have an acquisition if you want to avoid major dilutions. Yeah, simple as that.
No. Okay.
Okay, well.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for the opportunity, and I thank you for your interest in Nestlé, and let me take this opportunity also to thank you to some of you whom I have known since many years, particularly since my Nestlé Water years at the beginning of the last decade. I've very much enjoyed working with you, and thank you for your support, and I hope that you can continue support the interests of Nestlé. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
You have been listening to a podcast from Nestlé.com. Thanks for joining us, and we do hope you enjoyed it enough to join us again in the future.